wanna be better than oxygen, so you can breathe when you're drowning and weak in the knees. I wanna speak louder than Ritalin for all the children who think that they've got a disease. I wanna be cooler than TV for all the kids that are wondering what they're going to be. We can be stronger than bombs if you're singing along and you know that you really believe. We can be richer than industry as long as we know that there's things that we don't really need. We can speak louder than
Let's talk about radio, because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty, tell them a story.
I was at summer camp, and as like a 10-year-old, and not, you know, just chubby and not a great 10-year-old. And it was my parents are Baha'is, which is, you know, supposed to be a very inclusive religion. And so it's like a terrible irony that I was the outcast at Baha'i summer camp. And I remember that there was this Quebecois boy named Maxime, and these guys were sort of teasing me, and he stopped them and said, "No, I like Dan. You know, Dan's my friend." And, you know, I hadn't had that much to do with him, but we had talked a little bit, and I just remembered it as such, like, a, you know, this tender boyhood thing that he, you know, it takes a lot for a boy like that to stand up to his friends or to say, yeah, no, don't treat that person like that. And, you know, I never saw him before or since, but, I mean, like, he was a friend, like, to those other people and to me, right?
I don't know. Was he? What makes someone a friend?
The length of time you know them? How well you know them? How well they know you? Or is it something we just can't quite put a finger on?
Hey everybody, I'm Catherine Hanglin.
And I'm Kelly Jones, and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Each week on Pioneer Radio, we choose a topic. We talk about it, we ask you to talk about it, and we ask some experts to weigh in. This week's topic is friendship. With school just around the corner and many people coming back to Guelph from summer break, old friends are reuniting, and new friendships are being forged. As new friends, Kelly and I wondered, what is a friend? Why do we make friends? Why are we friends? Our quest for answers began on the streets of Guelph.
On a dismal Tuesday afternoon, I stationed myself downtown and asked local business owners and passers-by the seemingly straightforward question, what makes a good friend?
Wow, that's challenging.
I have no idea. Wow.
I say if they are a nice team and they back you up on everything.
A good friend is somebody that always has your back.
Having them available and trusting that, like, no matter what you do, they will have your back.
A friend is someone that is always there and that's someone you can rely on. When the chips get down, you can rely on this person, or if times are going good, that person is also there to celebrate that time with you. That's a good friend.
I would have to say reliability. Whether you have, I guess, the same values and similar sense of humor is usually a good thing.
Someone who's easy to talk to, someone who shares your same values, and someone who can laugh with you. Yeah.
The jokes are very important.
I could tell her anything in the world and her opinion wouldn't change for me. If I ever have any problems with work, family, boys, she just sits there and listens, gives her opinion, but it's never a strong opinion that's going to make me change my mind about anything, you know what I mean? But she's just there to listen.
I think just really being able to talk to someone, like, they don't
you don't have to tell them everything and they don't have to know everything about you, but I think just knowing that they're there and available to talk to you all the time.
Someone who's there for you, even when you're not doing so well.
A good friend is someone that's there for you when you need them, and someone you have fun with, someone's easy to talk to, and a good listener too.
Somebody you can have fun with.
Loyal, trustworthy, dependable.
I think a good friend is loyal and fun.
Someone who is open and honest with you at all times.
Being honest.
Honesty.
I think a good friend is someone you can trust.
I don't know, yeah, reliability and trust.
Creativity is a big thing.
Are you guys all friends?
Yes. Yep.
Why?
Because we like each other.
What do you like about each other?
They came to get our nipples pierced with us.
Oh, yeah? Just now you did that.
Yes.
Do you feel like you're better friends because you did it?
Yes.
Did you all do it?
No. Not just us two.
Oh, just you? Why didn't you do it?
I have tattoos.
Are you a bad friend?
I'm a bad friend.
No, he's not.
Do you think he's a bad friend because he didn't get his nipples pierced?
No, he's a good friend.
Because he came. He came and he watched us.
Yeah. He supported us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good friend supports you.
From watching your back to watching you get your nipples pierced, it seems like friends are people who are there for you. Presumably, you choose your friends, you choose how they're going to be your friends, what you do together, what you talk about, how well you get to know each other. And the interesting thing is that most of us choose people who are like us to be our friends. For example, Kelly and I had arranged to meet downtown the other day, and we both showed up in front of the same store, only to realize we were wearing the same clothes. We both really like cardigans, which made us wonder, are we friends because we're the same sort of person? Do people who are like us always make good friends? Can people who are different from us also make good friends? To find out what a good friend is and whether people who are similar to one another make the best kind of friends, we went to see some experts. Our first stop was the philosophy department.
Your friend should be your best enemy.
Okay, so that seems like the exact opposite of what we found true for everyone else. This guy, Dan Harris.
My name's Dan Harris. I am a PhD candidate in philosophy at the University of Guelph.
Well, he really means it.
I think, a friend is an enemy.
Or he means it enough to write a dissertation on the subject.
So I'm writing a dissertation on friendship, and mostly about the philosopher Nietzsche, and I'm interested in friendship from an ethical perspective, how friends help us in the projects that we usually think of as ethical, so working on ourselves. My thesis is, in its simplest form, it's trying to say that we do wrong when we think of friends as important because they're like us.
Let's back up, though. Before we can entertain the idea that a friend might be something more like an enemy, it helps to know a little bit about the history of friendship in philosophy.
Standard accounts of friendship in philosophy come from Aristotle, and that's 2,500 years ago, and they're largely unchanged, and there's a lot that's great about Aristotle's ethics, but whenever you sort of go to use it or to put it into effect today, it always strikes me that, the Greeks were a funny people, and they sort of talked a lot about ethics, but it's like taken for granted that it didn't really apply to women or whole class of slaves or people who lived outside of Greece, outside of Athens, barbarians. And so you've got this very culture that's very interested in ethics, but not at all concerned with the exclusions that it's making. And that's usually what we think of as ethics, is sort of who counts, why do they count, how do we have to treat sort of people and things and animals and things like that. And so I thought, there's probably something missing or incomplete in this account of friendship. So maybe with the Greeks and the Romans, philosophy is this sort of personal thing where we're working on ourselves, and we're thinking about our lives and how to lead good, virtuous lives. And that's true for a long time, and I think maybe with the Enlightenment and a shift to sort of political thinking that starts with the individual, questions about friendship and sort of what those relationships are like, how they fit in our lives, those are kind of pushed to the side of this kind of split that's appearing between our public lives and our private lives. And mm-hmm. so through the Enlightenment, ethics has been about sort of our public personas. So when we go out sort of in the world, in our jobs or with our dealings with others, ethics has been seen to sort of deal with that aspect of our lives. And our private lives, that's kind of, you know, good luck, you can sort things out like on your own. But that's not really the province of philosophy. I guess part of what my research does is try to take our thinking about friendship and reinsert it into our public lives and our ethical lives as members of a state or a nation or a culture or something like that.
So Dan's trying to work out the right way to have friends. He wants to know what makes a friend good, which is an ethical question, and it's also the question we asked the folks that we met on the street. So why does Dan have such a different concept of friendship? The answer lies in the fact that Dan not only wants our friends to be good for us, but specifically, he wants them to be good for our moral progress. And in Dan's terms, progress requires change. It requires change in belief, change in values, and change in who we take ourselves to be.
If I'm talking about from an ethical perspective, right? And so I'm thinking to myself, what sort of life I want to lead, what's important, who matters. So the issues that are topical are going to change from generation to generation. But say, you know, if you're a reflective human being these days, you're thinking about the environment and sort of like what kind of thing is, you know, quote unquote, the environment. How does it matter? How do I sort of engage with it and act in a certain way that sort of is ethical and respectful of its demands or claims on me? Maybe we're also thinking about animals. 100 years ago, maybe it was women. Before that, blacks. But there's these questions for any age about what sort of life what sort of demands are made on me by sort of these excluded groups. We sort of think of ethics as opening ourselves to sort of new and different demands that other beings might place on us or the ability to articulate demands that other people might make on us. Then what friends do is sort of have a voice that sort of point us in those directions and sort of tell us that we're not sort of doing all we can do. So if friends like you, then this allows a sort of complacency that you don't have to sort of question the boundaries that you're drawing and the lines that you're drawing. So if you can sit around the table with, if I was a sexist man and I was to have friends that just felt the same, then sort of nothing would get done. I wouldn't be challenged. I wouldn't have to sort of criticize my beliefs. And I think that's how moral progress can happen, is that we realize that where we're drawing the lines, the distinctions that we make are, you know, arbitrary, or they're coming out of, you know, drives and instincts in us that we shouldn't let sort of run the day. And so moral progress is about sort of realizing that sort of previously excluded groups deserve consideration. And that takes sort of reinterpreting ourselves or reinterpreting our relationships with other things and beings in the world.
Dan doesn't have an exact formula for how this moral progress is supposed to happen. That is, he can't say exactly how much our friends should be like us or unlike us in order to push us to change. But he can say...
That's a sort of a tension that I'm trying to sort out in my views, that so they're supposed to be unlike you enough they change you, but a friend is someone whose sort of input or voice sort of counts for a lot, counts as your own, right? When you're sort of thinking about yourself. But I want to say what allows someone to get into that place in your life shouldn't be that you like meet them and find out that you feel the same about a lot of things. We should be spurred to sort of surround ourselves with people that when we meet them, they provoke us and they challenge us. And maybe we don't have that much in common with them, but I had this, a conversation or an encounter, and they put something in a certain way that made me realize that I was looking at this the wrong way, or I wasn't paying attention to this issue or that.
Interestingly, though, you don't necessarily need a voice to make a good friend. All you need to do is unsettle a person, give them pause, make them think. We might assume that such relationships are forged in places like classrooms or between people engaged in similar projects, projects that lend themselves to deep reflection or social change. But Dan told us a story that he says is proof we can be challenged when we least expect it.
This is a bit of a reconstruction, but my girlfriend likes to tell a story about me that I stopped eating meat when a couple of years ago we were at a fall fair and we were looking displays of animals and things like that, and we were walking through the display of animals, and Jessica, my girlfriend, sort of turns to me and says, "That cow is staring at you." And there was a dairy cow there, and I made eye contact for about 30 seconds. And yeah, it really felt like, I was having some sort of connection with this cow. And I mean, it's a connection that, maybe right now I couldn't have with a rock. So I'll think of as a rock as something that doesn't make any demands on me or that I couldn't have any sort of contact with. And before that, maybe I hadn't had that with an animal, but sort of that connection makes me think, the cow didn't have a voice or whatever, but whatever was happening there was maybe speaking to me as a friend and saying, you have responsibilities that you didn't think you had, or that you have opportunities to sort of live your life in different ways, in ways different from how you have been. And so it's that sort of openness to sort of being affected by different things, which I see is, in the province of friendship. And so what friends are, friendship happens in those moments, and friends are ones who sort of talk to you and urge you towards those moments.
All Dan had to do was to be looked at, and that cow befriended him and challenged him, which made me wonder.
It sounds really passive. It sounds like you sort of go through your 80 years, if you're lucky, waiting for your friends to come along, and maybe they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's passive for me in the sense that it doesn't involve an actor or something like that. So I'm trying to get away from the view of myself as this, inner person or agent that's, inhabiting a body and trying to, exert its will on the world. And so part in the background of what I'm doing is sort of a criticism of that view. So if somebody says, who are you? Rather than citing some of your characteristics or your self-image, like I try to be honest or something like that, you cite things in the world. It gets a little mystical here, but I really think sort of that's who we are. So we're not our self-image. We're not what we think about ourselves. We're the sort of the difference that we make in the world. The very concrete and actual differences and impact that we have. And so looking for friends is passive in the sense that it doesn't involve sort of this active seeking of an inner self or agent.
So what does that mean when we go to make friends or try to be a friend for someone else? Again, although Dan won't give you a formula, there is one telling question you can ask yourself when you go to evaluate your friendships. Here's Dan again.
What should you want your friend for? I think of a friend as, someone, I said earlier, someone whose voice sort of counts as your own, and not in the same way that your mother's does. I mean, that your father's, their voice in your head, there's all sorts of dynamics, right? A friend is something different from that. So, what should you want that voice to be? Should you want a reassuring pat that says you're fine, you're doing things right? Or shouldn't you want someone who sort of challenges you? So you could say, well, what type of person is it who doesn't want to be challenged? Mm-hmm. From some perspective, we can say we shouldn't want to be that type of person. We should want to be challenged. It's only when we get challenged that we open ourselves up to sort of new obligations and responsibilities. And I think, become better people.
It seems that when we go looking for friends, we should make ourselves sort of vulnerable. We should be open to and available for change. In fact, it seems like the only way to ensure good, ethical friendships is to always be willing to be called into question as not quite good enough. Which, frankly, sounds a little antagonistic. I mean, we heard earlier that people appreciate their friends because they can relax around them. A friend is relaxing precisely because they accept me for who I am and don't normally threaten my sense of security. And so I asked Dan, if friends are supposed to challenge us and push us in these ways, what's the difference between a friend and an enemy? And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention here that I asked Dan to explain his answer using superhero examples, just so that the term enemy doesn't seem too extreme.
So there's a sense in which I do think a friend should be an enemy. And so I mean it should be an enemy in certain respects. And what Lex Luthor wants, he wants Superman's downfall, right? He wants Superman not to exist. And he wants everything that Superman stands for, right? He wants the opposite. Mm. He just wants sort of the annihilation of Superman. And the way that I've been talking about friends is yeah, that's, I think that's what you want. So you want to help someone to, Nietzsche's language is overcome. So self-overcoming, to overcome yourself. You could say annihilate or kill yourself, but it's yourself at sort of time one, right? So it's like, you know, imagine, you know, you're 75 or 95 or something, and you're looking back on your life and you realize, you know, that you're the same person you were when you were 18. Wouldn't that be an awful feeling? So I think, yeah, a friend is an enemy. He wants you to sort of overcome yourself, but, you know, but understood in the sense that what you are is this being who can live for 100 years and do that a few times, that you can hold things as important and have a certain ethical configuration. And you can get over that. You can think that that's insufficient or something. And you can, you know, overcome that first version of yourself and become a different person. I think we should want that. We should want to be drastically different many times over through our life. If we're sort of stable, it means we're not questioning anything. And when we can sort of look at the, you know, history of human societies and, you know, at any point in history or in any society, it's usually been a bad idea not to question, you know, the society you're in or what you think. There are these huge blind spots in our thinking, and so it's a bad idea not to seek them out.
Our friends, then, are enemies to our blind spots, those parts of ourselves that we take for granted or maybe choose to ignore. With this in mind, we can return to the question, should our friends be like us or should they be different from us? Here's Dan again.
In trying to talk about difference in friends, and it seems, you know, swimming against the current, because we all have experience of really solid friendships that seem to be based on just liking the same things and enjoying the same things, mm-hmm. and enjoying each other's company and not questioning. And that, I mean, I have those friendships and I think most people do. And so I don't want to sort of discount that from the, you know, the whole realm of friendship. A lot of the time we have, you know, really good friendships with people that don't push us. But if you think about what that's like, it doesn't seem very desirable. If I think of like a, you know, you get to be middle aged and you have a 30 or 40 year friendship, and the person's never questioned you or never challenged you, and you know, you just stay in and watch Coronation Street together, like this. Like, that's not life. That's not ethics.
That's marriage, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but seriously, it seems like I can befriend a cow who is decidedly different from me, as well as Catherine, whose cardigan collection is decidedly similar. So, should I just hope for more difference than similarity when I meet a new person? Or is there just no permanent answer to this question about how to measure our friendships based on similarity and difference?
There's a trouble there, that you need some sort of in. Maybe in practice that often happens with, because they're like us in certain ways. But maybe, you know, sometimes I'll see drifters or something. See them in Guelph or in any city, right? And you can kind of tell that they're not quite homeless, that they're actually on a mission. And they're so unlike me, right? Like I'm a real homebody. I plan everything. I'm not sort of a last minute type of guy. And so they're so different. But I think I can see that the way they're living their lives, and I can see like the opening of some sort of value in that. And it makes me question like that there's something I'm missing, right? And so it's a pretty broad conception of friendship to try to include that, like the drifter that I don't even talk to. But that's sort of what I'm getting at. You see someone living a life or taking certain things seriously, and that makes you look at yourself. So I think that's kind of friendship, it's sort of being affected by another being, whether it's something he says or sort of eye contact or just could be anything.
Special thanks to...
My name's Emily.
My name's Monet.
Jarrett.
Darcy.
My name's Mark.
Mike.
Jay.
My name's Ian.
Malcolm.
Olivia.
Adam.
My name's Jason.
Hi, my name is Ed.
My name's Josh.
Karina.
My name's Karsten.
Steven LG.
Nick LG.
Dan Harris.
My name's Dan Evans.
My name's Derek.
My name is Andrew.
Janet.
Walt.
Abigail.
Lori Schnarr.
Chantel.
My name is Miles Stemp.
Anthony.
Laura Hanasek, a.k.a. Ginger.
That was our show, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We're on every Monday from 5 until 5:30 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM. And you can also catch us online at pioneerradio.wordpress.com. And Pioneer Radio there is all one word. So for our next episode of Pioneer Radio, we'll be exploring the catchphrase, back to school. What does it mean for Guelph and Guelphites and the wider community to go back to school? Is excitement more widespread than dread? Is there a difference of opinion between students and professors about what it means to go back to school? Or does everyone suddenly feel childlike again? And what if you've never been to school before? And what if you're going back after 34 years? We'd love to hear from you, so please feel free to send us your back-to-school stories or your friendship stories or any other bizarre stories. Be forewarned, if your story is particularly awesome, we might read it on air. Thanks again for tuning in, and we really hope we'll see you here again next week, Mondays at 5 to 5:30 on CFRU. Thanks, everybody. Bye!
You're listening to CFRU 93.3.
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.
I'm your host, Sheila O'Reilly, and I'd like to invite you to a dog's breakfast, Saturday mornings from 10 to 11. We'll be celebrating music from all corners of the globe, with a special focus on music inspired by elsewhere, but cooked up by our many voices here in Canada.